Ronnie Lee Gibson.
Yes.
I also know you or have heard of you as Bo, or yeah. Little Bo,
yeah, Little
as
Bo.
Some people call you. What do I call you?
I don't know. It's up to your, it's your preference. It's kind of funny, though, the people that call me Little Bo, it's kind of like you can tell how long someone's known me. Or, well, I say that, but there are some people that have known me that long, but they still decided to call me Ronnie Lee after all. But for the majority, most people that call me Little Bo have known me at least since high school or around, like, graduating high school.
Well, where does Bo come from?
Bo is a nickname that I got. It was actually Bobo when I was born. It was from the movie Walk Like a Man.
Okay.
Featuring Howie Mandel.
Classic.
Yeah. When I was, and this is a supposed true story from my parents. The whole time my mom was pregnant, my dad kept telling her that she was going to have a monster, and she was, like, really angry about it. And when I was born, that movie had been on TV. My dad had been watching it in the waiting room. And, you know, Howie Mandel plays a character named Bobo who's raised by wolves, and they find him. He was lost as a baby, and when they find him, his hair's, like, long. He looks like, you know, like a cave dweller or something, you know. It's just unshaven, long, super long hair down to, the middle of his back or whatever. When I was born, I apparently had really long hair for a baby, like, shoulder almost mid-back. And of course, it fell out, like, within a few days. But when I popped out, they were like, oh, my God, look at the hair. And my dad was like, I told you you were going to have a monster. And, of course, you know, I think my mom backhanded him or something from the bed. And he was like, I'm going to call him Bobo because he'd been watching that movie. And
man, you know, Walk Like a Man. So I just looked it up as you were talking there. This is from 1987. Christopher Lloyd is in it.
Yeah.
Howie Mandel. This is an obscure movie to be named after.
Yeah, it's not well known. When I tell people that story, they're like, what movie?
I've never heard of it, to be honest with you. That's great.
I watched it one time.
And that was enough?
Yeah, that was enough for me.
A lot of people know you partly because you're in so many bands.
Yeah.
Let's run down the list of bands that you're in or have been in. So we got Model Citizen.
Yeah.
Which is a very well-known Birmingham-based band. Obviously, Matt Patton is in.
It's his band. He started it in 95.
Right. So, I mean, that's a big band, you know, especially for somebody who was growing up in the area, probably heard a lot of stories and was a fan of them. Black Willis. The original Shake Charmers. I always want to call it the Snake Charmers.
That's the joke.
Yeah. Necronomicids, Johnny Zell's sort of like heavy surf rock band.
It's kind of, I don't know. It's still kind of, I don't know if we're still a band.
That band.
You know.
Silver Lions 2020, The Quiet Ones, Druid City Rockers with Tarek Trent.
Yeah.
Defunct now, I guess. Yeah, I remember that band. I think I may have seen you guys at like the Concourse or something like that.
Yeah, we played a bunch there. We actually played the very first Tuscapalooza.
Oh, wow. At the Bama?
At the Bama. Yeah. And I set my cymbals on fire on that stage, on the big stage. And I was really like, it didn't cross my mind at the time that that was a historic building and I could have burned it down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, nobody stopped us. They just turned the lights off and it looked even better.
That was a pretty awesome event, though. There was like 24 bands in the span
in
of like
12 hours.
How many hours?
24 bands in 12 hours. That was who put that together?
90.7.
It was
Tim Neunzig.
Tim. Yeah. It was Tim's
Krautdog.
Yeah, Krautdog's brainchild. I remember.
Yeah.
He approached us to do that.
Yeah, that was like right after I graduated, because I was with 90.7 too. Yeah. I was a program manager while he was stage manager. He did a great job and got a lot of people and especially local musicians involved, and that was an amazing event. He deserves a lot of credit for that, and the Bama too, for putting it on and being patient about flaming cymbals on the stages if they even knew about it. But the Crown Imps, obviously band still going. Mm-hmm. Dan Turner and the Agitators,
two of my roommates actually are in that,
and Golden Monica, a band that you've been a part of for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. Now thereabout. So I heard an interesting story about how you joined Golden Monica. Tell me if I'm wrong here. You tell the story. You went from the merch table to playing bass in this band, but you weren't exactly welcomed with open arms at first to the band.
Well, actually, it's kind of more convoluted than that.
Uh-huh.
I was on tour with Lee Baines and the Glory Fires, and I was selling merch for them. And this was when Matt was still in the band, Matt Wortley. I did two tours with them, and at some point, we were in a van ride. I couldn't tell you where we were going to or from. And I just remember him being on the phone, and I was sitting in the next bench behind him. And he was like, oh, man, you know, I don't know what we're going to do when I get back, but, you know, I really really want to get this going, and you know, we need to get a solid bass player. And I'm just sitting there behind him like, hello, like waving my hand at him. Hey, dude. Like, of course, when he got off the phone, I suggested myself. I was like, you know, hey, man, I know I play in every band in town, but give me a chance. And the funny thing was, is when him and Caleb Christopher had their old band, Bangtail Cats, I auditioned to play bass for that because their original drummer, Chris, you know, he's a good buddy of mine at the time, and Chris Cousins, he really wanted me in the band. And Matt and I didn't know each other very well, at all. And I would say, don't quote me on this, but I don't think Matt really liked me that much as a person back then.
Uh-huh.
I think he thought I was kind of a shithead or something, but given that, I auditioned for him, and ultimately they decided to use someone else, and I think Matt played all the bass on the record when they recorded it, even though they had a current bass player. But, you know, fast forward down the road, and I'm like, you know, give it a shot, man. And he was like, yeah, all right, we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens when we get back. So we got back, and they arranged a practice. I went over to their place and knocked it out, I guess. You know, they decided to use me. Only took, you know, it was 5 years or something between that and Bangtail Cats.
So why do you want to be in all these bands? Like you said, you're in every band in town, and you're asking to be in another band. Why do you want to be in so many bands?
It's not that I really want to be in so many bands. It's just I really love to play, and if the opportunity presents itself, and I think they're cool guys and talented individuals, you know, I want to give it a shot. But it's also, I just want to stay busy. And still to this day, being in the 9 or 10 bands, I think we left a few off on that list, actually. Yeah, oh, we definitely did. There's Rattler and SDX.
Yeah,
and,
Probably
one or two more I'm not thinking of. I guess even being in all those bands, I still have free weekends. And I just don't know what to do with myself, you know. It's like, am I going to drink myself to death? Maybe, you know, I'd rather be playing or something, doing something productive. I mean, I live here. I love to play. I don't know what else to do in my free time because I'm not really great at anything else other than playing music. I don't know what to do. So I just try to play any and every chance I get.
Well, is it ever tempting to just focus on one, either just because you enjoy one more than the others, or you want to see where that band can go?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I do it. It's all played by ear, but it's kind of a general understanding between all my bands. If one is going to do something, you know, it's kind of first come, first serve basis. Like, I tell everybody, here's my schedule, here's the dates I already have booked. From here out, book them. That's your opportunity. If you don't take advantage of it, one of these other bands will. I mean, I'm going to go out on the road with the Dexateens in September, filling in for Patton while he's out with the Truckers.
No kidding.
Rattlers. I don't know if this is for sure, but we may do a tour sometime before or after that. You know, and I mean, it's like the dates are there and they're available for me to play, but if you don't book them, you know, sorry for your loss. I want to go and do things, and I want to tour, and I want to travel with my own bands. And I love all the guys that I play with, or I wouldn't play with them. And I mean, they are like family to me, but I can't sit and wait on everyone else. I can't sit and hear excuses of why we're not doing something or why we shouldn't be doing something. I want reasons of why we should be doing things. And so if it comes around, yeah, I'm going to go with whoever and focus on that person and that one act. And till that opportunity arises, I'll just keep playing on the weekends with whichever bands are booked.
Seems like a lot of songs to keep up with, too. I mean, the catalogs of all of these bands who write original music.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not playing covers all the time. I mean, maybe one here or there, but I mean, this is original music that you have to learn. Even if it was covers, it'd just be more songs that a different band is playing. Seems like a lot of work, a lot to keep up with. What makes it worth it? Other than, I just like to play.
I don't know, bringing good times to other people, I guess.
So you get a lot out of the live show.
Yeah, I get a lot out of playing, you know. It's not really, I mean, it's for me, but it's not for me. Bringing other people happiness, like seeing everybody else dance and party and have a good time. And I feel bad sometimes, though, because, like, one of my ex-girlfriends, one of the first things she said to me is, like, it breaks my heart that I can't dance with you while you're on stage. And that was always like, oh, man, what do you say to that? What do you do about that? It's like, well, you just keep rocking and hope she dances by herself and hope she parties and has a good time, you know?
So what is an ideal night like when you're playing a show? Like you said, you like to bring happiness to other people. You like to enjoy yourself on stage. Obviously, anybody who's ever seen you play can tell. I mean, shows can go well and shows can go really wrong. But for you, if you're picking whichever band you want to play with, it doesn't matter. What is an ideal night playing live music like for you? Why do you like to go to that bar or that venue to do it? What are you hoping to experience?
Man, that's a deep question. What am I hoping to experience? Shit, I don't know.
Well, you're there.
I'm there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hoping to meet new friends and meet new people and, you know, just spread the love of, you know, good times and good music. And an ideal night would be like play. I mean, like, you can have an ideal night anywhere. It's not, it doesn't even have to be a bar, really. I mean, you could be playing on a stage outside. I mean, it could be anywhere. But just having, I mean, everything, there's always something going to go wrong. You're always going to play at least one bad note. Somebody's going to mess up. I mean, we're not machines. We're only human. But an ideal night, you know, is just having a show that's not a complete disaster, which even having disastrous shows are, they're hilarious, really. Some people get really up in arms about it and frustrated, but I happen to find them quite funny. You know, if you can't laugh at yourself, you're taking yourself way too serious. Well, one of my favorite things, actually, is playing in Black Willis years ago. Adam Williamson once said to me, is like, man, don't take yourself serious. Just take your music serious. Just have fun. Laugh at yourself. I mean, we're all just a bunch of jackasses anyways, trying to do some stupid shit for some stupid people that are probably drunk, you know. But ideally, I guess a great night would just be everybody in a good mood, you know, having a good time, partying, dancing, whatever you like to do. Having a show that's not a complete train wreck and getting to meet, you know, wonderful people after it's all said and done and, you know, maybe trading shows with other bands, you know, just trying to get there.
I know that this is something that you hope happens and probably will. Let's be honest, at this Freedom Boogie Fest that you're putting on April 30th through May 2nd at Egan's Bar in Tuscaloosa, where you're going to have how many bands?
It was originally intended to be 10, but I think it's 12 now.
So I've seen the list of these bands. It's insane. I mean, a lot of them are your bands, right?
So it's like just two.
Golden Monica and the Crown Imps, right, are going to be playing the show. You've got bands like Bakwai and the Dirty Lungs and Hartle Road from Mississippi, Freaky Deakies, Bohannon's. I mean, the list goes on here. Why put an event like this on other than the obvious reasons of it sounds like a great rock and roll weekend? A great set of rock and roll shows. This seems important to you. This is your birthday, first of all.
Yeah, Thursday is my birthday, the first night. It's my 27th birthday. It's also, it was just kind of a joke tossed around, but I was actually supposed to go to court today to finish some legal issues I had, which I actually turned my paperwork in on the 20th, and I didn't have to go to court. So technically, I am a free man from legal troubles of once had. And so that was kind of the whole thing about the Freedom Boogie, at least the name was, I'm a free man again, yes. And then it's my 27th birthday, and there's that whole classic joke, the 27 Club, let's see if I can make it through this, you know, whatever. So I just decided to do that, and I kind of picked up the idea from Craig, Sweet Dog Pickering, you know, the man. He does his crap out, his annual crap out, which... I think the name of that was coined from Matt Patton, actually. He told Sweet Dog once, oh, you're crapped out, dog. Oh, yeah, well, I'm gonna do a birthday show and call it The Crap Out. It's like, there you go.
Yeah, well, you just add this to the Crap Out is always a lot of fun. The Ham Ham Jam Jam, obviously, is another weekend kind of like this where all of these bands converge onto each other and just sort of blow the place out.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I think for all of us, I don't want to speak for Sweet Dog and Ham, but I think they would agree. It's not about us. It's not about me. It's just about getting friends and, you know, family and bands, music, and getting everybody that you love and care about as people and introducing them to each other, you know, if they don't already know each other, and having them have a good time in one spot.
I want to go back a few years, back when you were growing up here in Tuscaloosa. At what point did music start to rear its head in your life? When did it start becoming familiar to you and present? Was it something that your parents brought in your life?
Well, I could take it farther back than that, actually. I was a drummer. I started out on drums when I was 4 years old. My dad, I'm not really sure how we ended up with the kit. I don't know if it belonged to my dad's drummer. I think it did, but he owed my dad money or something, so my dad just kept the drums at our house until they had gigs, and then they'd play or whatever. But so I would just go and bang around on them or whatever. And you know, you fast forward a few years, I'm not getting much better. I was just young and didn't grasp the concept really so much at that point in time. And by the time I was about 7 or 8 years old, I decided, you know, I want to be like my dad. My dad's a guitar player. I told my dad, you know, I want a guitar. So my dad sells off all the drums and everything and gets me a couple of guitars. And I didn't really get serious about it until I was 12. But I had them all those years. I had like 2 or 3 guitars and strummed, had a little, one of those little chord charts that everybody probably had in like middle school hanging on their wall or something, teaches you like the basic chords. And I don't know, I wasn't super interested. And then I, at the time, you know, being a kid, you don't really know what you're listening to as far as music. But I knew ever since I was like 6 or 7 years old, I was obsessed with Elvis. I had been to Graceland a bunch of times with my grandparents. I had a huge velvet painting of Elvis, which my dad now has possession of, and countless other random Elvis things. And
is this because your parents were into it, your grandparents?
No, this is just
or
something I got into.
Really?
Just
why do you think
own.
That was? I mean, was there
I have no idea.
Tape, a movie you watched or
maybe,
something?
You know, I couldn't tell you why I got so into Elvis. It was just maybe
Elvis.
The dance or seeing something, an old video or something of him from the 50s playing and singing. But getting into that and stuff like that, it just led me to wanting to actually play more as I got older. And by the time I was 12, I got real serious about it. My dad was like, well, I really didn't want you to grow up to be a musician, but if you really want to play guitar, I'm going to show you like 3 or 4 chords and that's it, and you're on your own. And here's a couple of CDs. You know, I think he taught me like 4 basic chords and gave me a Jimi Hendrix CD and a Deep Purple CD. And I think he said, yeah, here, if you want to start out with some basic slide, here's a, gosh, I can't even think of who it was. It was like probably that, what's his name, that did one bourbon, one scotch, one beer.
Is it Thurgood?
Yeah, George Thurgood. Yeah, there you go. Something like that, you know. That's when I really started playing and got serious about it. I've never had any proper training. Everything's been done by ear. For the most part, it took for like years to get like to where I am now.
Well, so what did your parents do? You said your dad played music. Did he do it professionally?
He's been playing since he was 14. Like, he dropped out of high school to go on tour with a touring band. I think that was in 67. He dropped out of school to travel with a touring band and just kind of was on and off the road, played in different bands over the years. I think the band he traveled with the most was a band called Peaches and Cream, which I think there's a photo of that on my Facebook somewhere that I uploaded at one point. But sometime in the 70s, he spent like 5 or 6, 7 years in Florida playing, like had a residency of some sort and stayed down there for a long time and playing at like probably a hotel lounge of some sort. They just had like an ongoing residency for however long and ended up like back in Alabama at some point, probably I think it was 77 or 76, and started his band, which is actually Boogie Junction. They wrote originals and whatnot. I've actually got the master tapes of that and I've never listened to them, sadly. I don't have a cassette player. So I have no idea what my dad's original music sounds like. But I mean, for a long time, he, like, other than in the 60s and 70s when he was traveling and playing in those bands, I think they played originals. But for most of his career, he's done like top 40 cover band stuff. And current Boogie Junction lineup is a cover band. He's the only original member. I think one other guy might still be alive, but all the other original members are all dead.
What does your mom do?
She was in finance for years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you didn't go, the finance route didn't really appeal to you.
No.
The guitars and all that good stuff.
Being a drunken buffoon seemed a lot more fun.
I watched a recent video you guys made with Druid City Brewing Company, your performance and the interview as part of Live at the Brewery, something people should definitely check out on YouTube. And you say in the video during the interview that your parents think Golden Monica is one of the best bands that you've been in. What does their opinion mean to you? You brought it up. You made a point to note that.
I mean, I won't say that my mom's seen every band that I'm in or have been in, but she's seen most of them. And my dad has, I think my dad's seen every band I've been in at least once. I mean, my dad's an incredible guitarist. I mean, he's amazingly talented, and I can't play anything like him. We have totally different styles, and that was why he never wanted to teach me. He didn't want me to steal his style, oddly enough. But I value his opinion just because he's my dad, you know, and it has nothing to do with the fact that he's a musician. I love my dad, and you know, I know I can trust him. He's seen thousands of bands, I'm sure, over the years, and you know, he was probably 10 or 11 years old when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan's show. So, I mean, he's seen all the great bands. He saw ZZ Top before they were ZZ Top. You know, he's seen hundreds of now, like, widely known famous bands. I mean, he knows talent. And it meant a lot when he said that to me. And I mean, my mom said the same thing. And I mean, they said, oh, you know, well, Shake Charmers, they're a great band, you know, but I don't know if that's your thing, you know. And my dad even told me once, you know, son, I don't want to tell you this. And I think this is like after the first time he's seen Model Citizen two or three times, but it was like our second time seeing us. He was like, I don't want to tell you this, but I think your calling is you're a bass player. And I know you don't want to hear that. And I was like, no, but I really have a blast playing bass and playing in Golden Monica. I mean, I feel like we're a lot of talented guys and we're actually all the same age. I'm like the young guy in every band I'm in except that one. You know, there's always like at least a 10-year difference almost.
When you were growing up, sticking to sort of your upbringing here in Tuscaloosa, what were you listening to as you started to develop your own musical taste beyond the Elvis thing as you were growing into your adolescence, middle school, high school? What were you listening to?
Well, as a typical kid, it's mostly radio stuff. I guess at the time, there's a lot of alternative rock and grunge on the radio. I was a huge, coming out of middle school, actually, like seventh or eighth grade, I got really into Nirvana and like all the Sub Pop bands and stuff like that. I was a real big fan of, like, the Melvins and Meat Puppets. And, I mean, typical, like, well-known grunge bands. Became a big fan of Mudhoney. And didn't really know how to venture out from there. By the time I was in high school, I mean, a lot of my friends, I didn't like what they listened to. The kids I made friends with in high school, a lot of them were, like, metalheads and stuff like that. And, I mean, I ended up getting into metal, and I had a metal band years ago. But really, getting into music and, like, influences was really when I met Sweet Dog. And he was like, oh, man, you love these bands? Oh, here, listen to the MC5. Listen to the Stooges. Listen to Blue Cheer. And, you know, if you like all that, you should go farther back. Learn the roots. Listen to, like, all these great blues artists that, you know, a lot of these guys were either ripping off or covering their songs and stuff, you know. And it really was Sweet Dog who led me down the path from, like, grunge to, like, punk rock and roll and having the Dexateens practice in my basement when I was probably 14 or 15. And getting to know all them real well. And they just kind of like, man, just check out all these bands. Here you go. And just compiled me a list of shit to listen to. And it's just been out of there, out of hand ever since.
Why were they practicing in your basement? Were they friends with your dad or what was the deal?
Sweet Dog knew my mom well. And their first album, the Headphones self-titled record, had just come out. And he had came by the house one day, I think, to give my mom a copy and met me, gave me a copy. And I actually, the first listen to it, I really hated it. You know, I was just like, oh, man, I don't know about all this. Of course, I was still in my Nirvana phase then and just didn't know anything. I didn't know what I liked. You know, fast forward a little while, Sweet Dog starts coming around a lot more. And, you know, he's, you know, man, let me show you all these bands. Like, let's hang out, you know? It's like, I didn't know your mom had a son. Like, you're cool, man. And they were just looking for a place to practice, and I had a whole PA and amps, and I had a drum kit there and everything. It was just pretty much set up for my band to practice there, and it was convenient for all of them to meet there and practice, and I kind of got to learn a bunch of stuff and learn the ropes. And
I bet that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it was killer. I mean, you know, like, being 15, you know, and oh man, like, you know, none of my friends have any idea who the Dexateens are, but they're playing down at Egan's, and, you know, Sweet Dog's, you know, oh man, I wish you could come down here and whatnot. And of course, you know, being so young, couldn't, but getting to see them practice in my basement, and even like they would go through the set and then take a break, and when they'd come back to do the set back through, they'd let me kind of plug in and play along and kind of learn their songs. So I actually know like that and Red Dust Rising, that first album and Red Dust Rising, I kind of know back to front like as well as they do. I could probably play it note for note just about.
Well, it sounds like you're gonna have to here pretty soon.
Well, yeah, filling in for Patton, that's big shoes to fill.
Well, so you're gonna be playing with the Dexateens, this band that played in your basement and that you watched and learned from and just gleaned all of this influence and these references and in these bands from. I mean, that has to really be a special thing for you personally, that you're playing with this band that meant so much to you growing up.
Yeah, it's kind of like a weird coming of age thing. Like, I didn't really see that happening, you know, back then. It was just kind of like, these are some cool dudes that like really good music. And I was getting into all that at the time. And now it's like, what the hell happened? How did I get here? And I mean, the same thing happened with Model Citizen too. I was at a party. It was a Halloween party on University Boulevard, and I couldn't tell you what year it was, but I was probably 14 or 15 and shouldn't have been there. But I had some older friends that, you know, knew about the party and was like, let's go. You know, there's some bands playing. I think John Azale's old band, The Hell, was playing.
And great band. Yep.
A DJ from New York. I forget the guy's name, but he's friends with Patton and Sweet Dog and all them. And at that time, I don't think I'd met Sweet Dog at that point in time. I may have been 14. This might have been right before I met him. I saw Model Citizen and they just blew me away. And I was like, Matt, your band rocks. I know I'm just a kid, but y'all are the greatest, like one of the greatest bands I've ever seen. And I really want your guitar. You want to sell me that guitar? And he's like, no way, man. I've had this probably since I was your age. Then I just never heard anything about them again. And fast forward to, I told Matt like right after that too. I was like, man, I hope I'm in a band like yours one day. And so fast forward to years later, the Dexteens are practicing in my basement. And one night, the Dexteens and Model Citizen and I think the Woggles were all playing together. And Sweet Dog was like, man, I wish you could come to this. You really need to see Matt's band, Model Citizen. And it kind of was like in the back of my head, like, man, where do I know that name from? Model Citizen, that seems so familiar. I went and met Dog after the show was over, like drove out there. I think I was 16 at the time, or maybe 17 when this happened. And I drove and met him, you know, it was probably like 3 a.m. or something after the show was over and they were all loading out. And I saw Matt. I was like, oh, holy shit, man. We know each other. Like, and you know, the Dexteens have been practicing in my basement for like a year at this point. It's like, Matt, you and I met at a Halloween party like a few years ago and I tried to buy your guitar. And he was like, oh shit. Yeah, I remember. That was, holy shit, that was you. Weird, man.
Small world.
Small world. Yeah. And now I'm in Model Citizen. After I told him, I was like, I hope I'm in a band like yours one day. Well, I didn't think I would be in that band. How the hell did that happen?
Is that pretty surreal?
It's pretty crazy to me. I mean, Model Citizen was like one of the first like real like rock and roll bands I ever saw. I mean, I went to concerts when I was a kid, but you know, wasn't like anything spectacular.
So when you were a kid too, and just when you were growing up, was religion a part of your family at all?
Yeah, I mean, I was raised a Christian. I mean, my dad and my mom are Christians, but
what denomination and all that?
I guess Baptist.
Baptist. Yeah. So I mean, did you go to church a lot?
Not a lot. No. Not really.
Wasn't your thing? Or
I just to this day, I hate to say this, but I can't believe in it.
You
know, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I hope my dad doesn't listen to this because it'll probably break his heart. But I'm just a non-believer. I mean, I don't know.
You know,
religion is not something I'm real serious about. And, you know, people are free to practice religion as they so choose. And
sure.
Oh, God, this is probably tear Elliot McPherson up too if he heard this. But, you know, it's just I have nothing against anybody. They can practice whatever they want. People can do whatever they want. I'm no judge. But for me, it's just not for me.
It's not working.
Yeah.
Well, I ask, I mean, just because it's growing up and playing rock music, I mean, secular music in a household that obviously approves of it because your dad is a musician and gave you music and that kind of thing, and they obviously support you. Did religion ever put any pressure on you at all? Was it something that you were able to sort of distance yourself from at an early age, or was it something that you just kind of ignored, or what?
Oh yeah, my parents got divorced when I was 4. I lived with my mom, but I mean, I saw my dad all the time, but my mom didn't really go to church that much. It was very rare that she did, so I didn't really have to go. But anytime I was with my grandparents, it was guaranteed we were going to church on Sunday, and I'd always go and get all dressed all nice and everything. I hated it. I don't know. I'm not a khaki tucked in short shirt kind of guy, really.
You know? Oh, you don't.
I just don't dress up very much. You know, you probably won't see me at very many weddings and such events. I guess I'm kind of a shit bag at times.
Is that how you look at it?
I don't know. But I would get dressed up and, you know, go to church with my grandparents just to please them.
Sure.
And make them happy. And I mean, you know, they're both dead now and I miss the hell out of them. But, you know, they gave me a Bible when I was probably like 5 and I still got it. And it's, you know, I have it and it's there. It's in my drawer in my desk at home, but I don't read it. I never have read the whole thing. You know, other than going to church with them, I just kind of got out of it because, I mean, my dad didn't really go when I was staying with him. My mom didn't really go when I was living with her. So I just never was really forced on me. You know, they didn't force me to go, but they were believers.
You went to Central High School your freshman year, and then you go to Bryant High School, Paul W. Bryant High School here in Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what was high school like for you? Was that a fun experience? Was the music thing a big part of your life at that point? And what did people think of that?
High school was a lot of fun for me. So, you know, some people say that you always want to go back and do it, and some people say you'll never want to go back and do it. I'd totally do it again. Freshman year at Central was a lot of fun. I met a lot of people, and a lot of friends. Some of them I'm still very close with. Some of them I'm not so close with. We're still friends. We just don't hang out like we did in high school. But, you know, I actually didn't make a whole lot of friends with most of my class. I met people from other schools that went to like county high and whatnot. And I made a lot of friends with people that went to county schools, going to the mall and stuff like that, being a mall rat, just being a little turd, wasting life, wasting money, allowance money and whatnot. But we had a lot of fun. By 10th grade, I had joined Druid City Rockers, which at that point in time was a punk rock band called A Failed Utopia. And it featured Tarek Trent, Anindo Sarker, and Jeff Matthews. Jamie Chestnut was the drummer. They all went to Northridge. I think Jamie went to Central. He may have went to Northridge when it split up as well. Jamie had quit the band, and I'd seen them play a couple of house parties, and I didn't think they were very good. And one day I ran into Anindo at Decade Music when it was still open over there where across the ways from Druid City Brewery is, and I was just poking around. I think it was actually my birthday, actually. I had some money, and I was poking around in the drums thinking about buying a drum kit, and he walks in, and he's like, "Hey, man, our drummer just quit. Do you know any drummers? We're about to record a demo, and we've already got the time booked. It's at 600 Studios. Like, we just need a drummer, like, just a temp or anybody, you know?" And I was like, "Do I know a drummer that'll play with y'all?" "No, but I will." He's like, "Are you even a drummer? Like, don't you play guitar?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do. Now, I was years ago." He's like, "Do you have a drum kit?" And I was like, "I was going to buy one today. So I'll just go ahead and buy one. I'll join your band." And that was that. So I bought a kit and started practicing with them. And it was kind of like riding a bike. I like picked up drums again like it was nothing and started playing. And it was a little rough around the edges, but they were kind of shitty musicians at the time too. We all just kind of sucked in our own ways. And it was, you know, it's like that high school kind of shitty punk rock band that a lot of musicians probably had one that they're embarrassed about. And we played a couple shows with Anindo, and it just wasn't working out. And Tarek was wanting to do different stuff, was wanting to go a different direction. Ultimately, Anindo left the band. They had changed the name, you know, from A Failed Utopia. Tarek and I were sitting around. It's like, "Man, need to come up with something." And we've been listening to, like, the MC5 and stuff. It's like something with, like, initials would be cool. But I don't know. I really love Tuscaloosa, and I always try to relate everything to Tuscaloosa. And we're like, "Man, what kind of name could we come up with that's, like, you know, last minute?" We had a gig booked, wanted to change the name before the gig, came up with Druid City Rockers, and that was that. And had a lot of fun, played a lot of shows, you know, all throughout high school. You know, we met a lot of cool people. I met a lot of people at Northridge because I didn't go there, and they did. And a lot of people were coming to see us at Swayze's, and then I guess the Concourse. They were both the same place, which is now the Alcove.
Right.
When the funniest thing was, when we were playing shows there, I was like, "Man, this would be a great spot for a bar." And then 5 years later, it's like, you know, it's a bar here in town all of a sudden. It's funny. But I did that, and I started a metal band with some friends of mine that went to Northside and County High. We never really did play any shows. We just practiced in my basement. Like every other weekend when I went and playing shows with Druid City Rockers, we were practicing, and people would come over to my house, and we'd kind of have like these like 30, 40 people, like kind of parties and just hang out. People would watch us practice, and it was like mostly like most of their friends that I didn't really know that well, and, you know, later became real good friends with. But that band eventually played a handful of shows live. Dave, the metal guy, God rest his soul, sure. Love the man, I miss him to death. He claimed that we were one of his favorite metal bands in town, and when they had his little benefit show at Egan's for his family, I was booked that night with Black Willis at the Nick, and I'll never forget it. We were supposed to headline the Nick, and we were playing with some like unheard of bands that were just like younger, way younger than me at the time, that were from Birmingham. I can't remember who, but we were going to headline, and we had to switch it around and open for these kids, basically, just so I could make it back so my metal band could play, because everybody's like, y'all have to play, you know, he would want this, you know, you got to do this for him.
And what was the name of the metal band?
It was Death Lights. not the greatest name. That actually featured Albert Arenas, Trey Green, Jack Whitechapel on bass, which later we went with this guy Bob Ramsey, and myself. We also had another kid that played guitar early on named Kyle Fondren. He didn't really make it long in the band, though. Albert switched from keys and vocals to guitar and vocals. Pretty much I had that going on all through high school. Those two bands played all the way up until about 2008. And I think Druid City Rockers had a reunion in 2009 for one night at Egan's when all of us were in town randomly. And we haven't played since then. We don't even really talk that much. It kind of sucks. You know, those are like my best friends for years. And we just kind of faded out, you know, got new bands going, different things in life.
That sounds like a really awesome high school experience, just to be meeting up with friends all the time and rocking out, playing music together, going to parties and stuff. You don't seem like a very shy guy to me. You seem like you have a lot of friends, especially in like the music scene. People know who you are. They like you. You're in a lot of all these bands. And I wonder if this all started because of when you were a kid, when you were a teenager, essentially, you were hanging out, like you said before, with a lot of older people in music. You weren't friends with a lot of people your age, you mentioned, at your school. Was that because you were hanging out and learning from all these older folks and playing in bands with older people? Like, looking back, what was it like as a younger person hanging out with people who were involved with bands and music and all these other things years from where you would be?
I would probably agree with you, at least on the older thing. I just, once I really got to know the Dextines and like all those bands and the Woggles, and I consider myself very fortunate to have that and to know them and get to know everybody that I got to know at such a young age and get to hear all the cool stories and the crazy stories and, you know, just shit that you wouldn't believe. You know, it's like, that didn't happen, but it did, you know. And I mean, that's the life, I guess. And looking back on it, I guess what really it came down to, when I really started getting into all those bands that they were turning me on to, and I was like, you know, actually, I really like stuff like this. I really actually like the Dextines now that I've listened to it about 3 or 4 times. And then they, you know, they're all practicing here, and you get finally see them live like once, and you're like, oh shit, like, yeah, they're a real band. This is what a real band is like, you know. And you know, seeing Model Citizen was like, oh shit, you know, mind's blown. And then you go back and you try to talk to kids that are your age, and you know, they don't know anything about what you're talking about. At least the kids that I was hanging out with in high school had no idea who most of those bands were at that age. I mean, I'm sure a lot of them now probably listen to a lot of the bands, the same bands that I listen to now, but in high school, I couldn't really relate a lot musically, and I mean, I'm just so into that, I don't know what else to do with myself. So I guess a lot of it stemmed from that, being around older people all the time, and every band I've been in, I've been the young guy, except for Golden Monica. I mean, it's like I said, there's always at least like a 10-year difference between me and like the next youngest member, usually. Patton and Mike Gott and Model Citizen, you know, they're in their 30s. Black Willis, they're all in their 30s. Except I think Justin Colburn's, like, our bass player is probably like 4 years or 5 years older than me. But I guess he's probably like 30-something now. I don't know. I have no idea, to be honest. But I mean, there's at least almost always guaranteed a 10-year difference. I mean, you know, in the Crown Imps, Jason is, I think he's 36. And Dan Hall, the drummer, is 53, I think, you know?
Yeah, so you're the young one. You're the baby in all these groups.
In all of them, except Golden Monica. That's Chase. Chase is the baby in that band.
You get to say that this time. But, I mean, being the baby in these bands, I mean, are you treated that way, or have people treated you like...
No, absolutely not.
They've treated you just like you're one of them? And
oh, yeah.
Has it been the case since you were a teenager, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, it's never been like a talking down to, or this is a dumbass kid and he doesn't know what he's doing, unless I've been a dumbass and done something foolish, which, you know, I've been corrected on, you know, for doing stupid shit, and should. I would love for people to call me out and call me on bullshit, because I love to call people on bullshit. So,
well, it's stupid stuff like what exactly?
I don't know, just being a dumbass, you know, like getting drunk and doing something foolish like you shouldn't be doing. I'm just going to go ahead and call myself out on kicking out my buddy Jim Bassett's taillights 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago?
Yeah. You know, we have I laugh about it now. I replace the taillights. But getting drunk and doing stupid shit, you know, sure, you know, call me out. Don't let me be a dumbass. But no, other than doing stupid shit like that, it's always been a fair level game. They've always treated me like an adult, and you know, it's never been like, well, you know, maybe you should work on that. It's always like, oh man, you got it, man. Just do it. Don't question yourself. You've got it. And it's always been like that for me. It's have the confidence. We know you got it. Do it. And I do it.
Was it ever intimidating for you? I mean, being around older people and seeing them do what they did. I mean, or is it something that's a lifestyle, or that's something that you wanted as a kid, or you were exposed to things that people your age and slightly younger or even slightly older were not exposed to at that point? What was it about that really appealed to you outside of the music?
Intimidation, I wouldn't say so much. Maybe early on, like when I first started kind of jamming with the Dexateens, like after their first set or whatever practice, but just because I knew that I couldn't play guitar like that. I knew. There was a little intimidation, but it didn't stop me from trying, because they're like, yeah, man, you've got it. Just do it. Just play it. You'll figure out the chords. I mean, you know, you're a good player. And I did. It took time, but I got over it. And I mean, really, to be honest, like being nervous or intimidated by stuff, it's not really playing. It's actually being a roadie. It's more intimidating to me than being like on stage playing. Like, I did two tours with Guitar Wolf, a Japanese rock and roll band. They're kind of like the Ramones of Japan, but being their roadie and pretty much their stagehand, like if a mic goes down, I've got to run out and get the mic and put it back up. If he jumps into the crowd and takes the mic with him and loses the mic in the crowd, I've got to basically reel the mic in, like, you know, fishing line, and then ball it back up and throw it to him like a football so he can keep singing, you know, hope he catches it. Stuff like that could be a disaster while I'm like responsible for trying to not let it be a disaster. That is more intimidating and freaks me out more than just playing and being around older, more seasoned musicians, because playing is, and you'll encounter people like this, but it's, some people treat it like it's a competition, and it's not. One of my favorite Sweet Dog quotes, and this was, God, this quote's like almost 10 years old, like almost. He said this when I was real young, and I don't even remember what it was a response to, but we're not playing sports. There's no whistles. There's no jerseys. There's no coaches coaching the band. This isn't a competition. It's about brotherhood and fellowship and, you know, love. It's not a competition. So there's no reason to be intimidated or anything about that, about playing with seasoned veteran players or older players. I mean,
or being around older people,
yeah,
like, let alone,
yeah, that in general, you know,
playing the music. I remember seeing older brothers and cousins and just people in general, and I guess your perception is, wow, they're older, they're cool. You're impressionable, right? And you can be easily influenced, and you want to do what they do and be around them at all times. I can imagine that there was just a different element. You saw things a lot differently than they did about, like, when you guys would be together and would be hanging out. I mean, was there any sort of thing where you would step outside of it and say, wow, like, this is different. Like, I feel cool for being with these people, or like, this is just, I don't know. It's kind of hard to articulate it.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. 'Cause I guess outside of my bands and, like, you know, having people over in like high school or whatever, you know, while we were practicing and whatnot, like, I didn't really go to other people's houses too much. Like, it was always like everybody coming to my house. So outside of my little world of growing up the way I did and seeing things the way I did, like, I couldn't really tell you, because this is all I've ever known. And I'm fortunate to know it the way I know it. And I've just kind of taken it and run with it and hope the best, you know.
Well, you guys, to me, Golden Monica, y'all rock about as hard as anybody in this town or otherwise, especially that I've seen over the years. And I think you, and obviously your parents and guys in your band, I think you guys know that you've got something. You know, you've got something special going. Y'all have a great chemistry at live shows, and I'm sure in the studio too. So now that you know you have this, and you know that Golden Monica can be something and can do something together, what do you do with it?
Well, we're almost done putting a record together. We've just got to do another session or two to finish up some vocals and get it mixed and mastered and pressed. And I guess from here out, it's trying to get this record out, doing another run of shirts, getting some merch. We hadn't really talked too much about it, but we'll probably put the record out ourselves, and it's usually easier if you just release, at least from what I've heard, it's sometimes easier to put a record out yourself and get picked up by a label after the fact. If you've already done the hard work, you know, it seems like you're a hardworking band. Like, maybe they'll, you know, they went through the trouble and the money and the effort of doing this themselves. Like, it's already out there. All we have to do is put our label and a barcode on it, and there you go, and distribute. So maybe, hopefully, is get some merch out there, get an album out there, try to get signed, and hit the road, you know? Because, I mean, our running joke on Facebook is we're Tuscaloosa's house band because we play around town a lot. We don't really venture out too much, and that's mostly on us, trying to not having merch to sell. It's kind of like, well, is it really worth it to go play out of town a couple times? Like, I mean, I'm not saying that we're not memorable or anything like that, but my experience with bands is, or seeing bands from out of town that don't have merch, is somebody going to remember who they are like 3 months from now? If you don't have a shirt or a sticker or a button or something to remember that night by, if you weren't blackout drunk or whatever.
Well, yeah, I go back to this Live at the Brewery interview that you guys did, and something you talked about was marketing the band. You pointed out that you have to work for it, and something you said, to paraphrase, you said, it's ridiculous how much you have to be involved. If somebody wants to talk to you after a show, if you want them to show up and bring friends, you've got to have merch. You've got to chat them up. You've got to make your presence known. Otherwise, you're just some band to them.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I feel like, at least in my experience, if I'm just seeing some guys that are just a band with no merch and nothing to really show, I mean, unless they're just like completely smoking and just like electrifying the crowd, I find it highly unlikely that, you know, it's going to be like, well, I might talk to these guys for a minute, get their band name, and am I going to remember, like, how drunk am I? Am I going to remember this, like, next week? Maybe. Like, I'll probably be sitting at home like, damn, what was that band's name? Shit. Oh, well. They'll probably be back. Maybe I'll recognize them. But, you know, you have to kind of get involved and, you know, sometimes talk to people and make an effort. And my dad used to say, you know, the crowd's not going to come to you. You know, you've got to go to the crowd sometimes, you know. And, I mean, that's not always the case. But sometimes you have to go to the crowd and say, hey, like, we're doing this. And if you like it, here's our shit. Like, we're trying. Check it out.
Well, I'm pulling for you guys. I think you guys are great, and I hope to see you guys in Tuscaloosa more. But again, I mean, that's me being selfish as a Tuscaloosan. What I always say about the bands I like in town is I hope they get out of here. You know what I mean? I hope they hit the road and I don't see them again for a long time. And y'all are definitely one of those bands. And the Freedom Boogie Fest, April 30th through May 2nd at Egan's Bar in Tuscaloosa, 12 bands you can see live. It's a no-brainer. Ronnie Lee Gibson, thanks so much, man.
Thank you, Bill.